Aphrodite and Adonis. Theas was an early king of Cyprus, renowned for his remarkable good looks. He and his wife Cenchreis had a daughter, Smyrna, also known as Myrrha or Myrrha, who grew up harboring secret incestuous love for her handsome father. Now, Cyprus was sacred to Aphrodite, being the island on which she first set foot after her birth from the foam of the sea, and it was a spiteful Aphrodite who had breathed into Smyrna this unnatural desire for her own father. It seems that the goddess had of late been aggrieved by the inadequacy of King Theas's prayers and sacrifices to her. He had displayed the temerity to open a new shrine dedicated to Dionysus, a cult which was proving popular amongst the islanders. Aphrodite regarded the neglect of her temples as the worst possible crime, far worse than incest. But in the minds of mortals, even those of the notoriously laissez-faire and decadent Cyprus, incest was a taboo of the gravest kind. An anguished Smyrna attempted to smother her guilty feelings. Aphrodite, who really seemed determined to sow mischief, hatched a plot with Smyrna's maid Hippolyte that would bring the whole business to a disturbing crisis. One evening, when Theas had got himself good and drunk, as he liked to do since his discovery of the vinous virtues of the god Dionysus, Hippolyte, under the spell of Aphrodite, led Smyrna to his chamber and into his bed. The king made greedy love to his daughter there, too intoxicated to question his good fortune. In the dark of night and the fog of wine, he failed to recognize the fruit of his own loins. He only knew that a young, desirable, and passionately obliging girl was appearing each night to pleasure him like some kind of divine succubus. After a week of these intense and joyful visitations, he awoke one morning with a determination to know more about her. He put out word that he would reward with a mountain of gold anyone who could discover the identity of the mysterious stranger who had lately made his nights so wildly pleasurable. Smyrna had been acting out her passion in a kind of mad dream of lust, but when she heard that all Cyprus was now trying to find out the secret of her nightly visits to Theas, she ran from the palace to hide in the woods. She wanted to die, but she could not forsake the child that she felt growing inside her. Railing at the laws of man that made her love criminal, she begged heaven to take pity on her. Human civilization has made spiteful laws, and what nature allows, the jealous laws forbid, is her complaint, according to Ovid in his Metamorphoses. In answer to her prayer, the gods transformed Smyrna into a weeping myrrh tree. After 10 months, the tree burst open and disgorged a mortal baby boy, Adonis. Naiads anointed the child with the soft tears that wept from the myrrh, a balm which remains the source of the most important birth and coronation oils to this very day. Adonis grew up to be a youth of the most unparalleled physical attractiveness. Oh dear, I've said this too many times for you to believe me again. It is true that all who looked upon him were smitten forever, and true also that his name lives on as a descriptor of paragons of male beauty. It is necessary for us at least to know that Adonis was lovely enough to attract, as no other mortal ever had, the one who had done so much to bring about his birth, the goddess of love and beauty herself, Aphrodite. They became lovers. It had been a wild and tortuous path to this coupling. The goddess, in a spirit of malicious revenge, had caused a father to commit a forbidden act with his daughter, which brought forth a child whom Aphrodite loved perhaps more completely than any other being. A lifetime of therapy could surely not clear up such a psychic mess as that. They did everything together, Adonis and Aphrodite. She knew that the other gods hated the boy. Demeter and Artemis could not bear to see so many girls sickening with love for him. Hera stonily disapproved of the issue of so shameful and flagrant an indecent affront to the sacred institutions of marriage and family, while Ares was stormily jealous of his lover's intense infatuation. Aphrodite sensed all this and determined to keep Adonis safe from the harm her resentful family might do him. Because her precious mortal lover, like most Greek boys and men, showed a great passion for hunting, the protective Aphrodite told him that while he was free to chase prey of manageable size and limited ferocity, hares, rabbits, doves, and pigeons, for example, he was absolutely forbidden from pursuing lions, bears, boars, and the larger stags. But boys will be boys, and when the girls are away, they cannot resist reverting to type and showing off. And so it came about that one afternoon Aphrodite's beloved found himself alone on the trail of a great boar. Some say the boar was actually Ares himself in disguise. Adonis cornered the beast and was just pulling back his spear ready for the kill when it turned on him with a savage roar, tusks bristling. Adonis dropped his spear in fright as he leapt back, but he was a brave young man and managed to steady himself and plant his feet firmly enough to meet the boar's charge. As it rushed forward, Adonis spun his body round in a graceful turn like a dancer, and Adonis seized it by the neck as it passed. But the boar was cunning. It dropped its head to the ground, letting the boy think he had subdued it. Kneeling down, Adonis pushed with one hand against the animal's head, feeling with his spare hand for the knife he kept in his belt. The boar sensed his chance and pulled his head up with a snarl, lifting and twisting his great tusks. They tore Adonis's stomach open, and he fell mortally wounded to the ground. Aphrodite arrived in time to see her lover bleeding to death, and the boar, or was it Ares, grunting in triumph as it galloped away deep into the forest. There was nothing the weeping goddess could do but hold Adonis and watch him choke out his last in her arms. From his blood and her tears sprang up bright red anemones, named after the anemoi, the winds that so quickly blow away the petals of this exquisitely lovely flower, which is known to be as short-lived as youth and as fragile as beauty. Shakespeare's long poem Venus and Adonis retells the myth, basing itself on the version Ovid tells in his Metamorphoses. In Shakespeare's version, the death of Adonis causes Venus to curse love and decree that henceforward it should always be tinged with tragedy. Sorrow on love hereafter shall attend, she prophesies in her grief. It shall be cause of war and dire events, and set dissension twixt the son and sire. They that love best their loves shall not enjoy. A prophecy that seems to have come all too true.